The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Periodically on Armchair Traveler, we have shared articles that look at how climate change is affecting travel. On today's episode, we read from an article that was researched and written by Washington Post writers Rick Nowak, Meg Kelly, and Sandra Mell. Their work first appeared in the Post and then in the October 30, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer. The headline reads, "Would you give up planes for these trains? Europe pushes travel that's climate friendly." So let's learn more. From flight shame in Sweden to cheap train tickets in Germany to flight bans in France, European countries are trying to get people to embrace lower emission trips. The Washington Post explored how well those efforts are working and whether Europe's railways are ready for a new era. Waiting on a train platform in Hässleholm, Sweden, Manny Elfborg was both poetic and practical in explaining why his family was taking a 24-hour rail trip rather than two short-hop flights to their vacation destination in Slovenia. Elfborg, 61, talked about the experience of the train, watching landscapes pass by outside the windows. He said he appreciated disembarking in city centers rather than at airports at the outskirts, but his son, 27-year-old Theodore, acknowledged they were an exception among their family friends. "We're usually the only ones who say, 'We took the train.'" For nearly two decades, cheap, short flights defined European travel. With the rise of budget airlines, people with limited discretionary funds could consider trips that were previously out of reach, and people took advantage of that access, exploring other countries and cultures, embracing the European Union ideal of free movement across borders. But all those flights amounted to a big carbon footprint. While cheap for travelers, they incurred a hefty environmental cost, undermining Europe's pledges to cut harmful emissions and become carbon neutral. Now, climate-conscious European governments and groups are going to varying lengths to break people of their flight habits. Some are building on the flight shame movement popularized by the Swedish teen activist Greta Thunberg. Now, Germany and Spain have been experimenting with ways to make train travel more appealing, offering tickets at a nominal price. Meanwhile, France, the Netherlands, and Austria are trying to limit people's options by limiting flights. We set out to discover how well those efforts are working, whether they are successfully getting people to skip carbon-heavy flights in favor of more environmentally friendly trains. We embarked on a multi-leg train trip that began in Sweden and took us through Denmark, Germany, the Netherlands, and Belgium before ending in France. Along the journey, we found that the government efforts have contributed to something of a rail renaissance. Trains at the end of summer in Europe were packed. "I had a seat available on this train for the last time in May," said Linus Hall, a conductor on the sold-out Snälltåget, a sleeper train between Stockholm and Berlin. Flights are also nearly back to their pre-pandemic levels, however, and for those who opt for the train, European rail services may not be up to their expectations. "Our trip involved multiple delays, complicated connections, long bathroom lines, stolen luggage, and at one point a rail strike that forced us off the train and onto a bus." Malmo, Sweden to Berlin. We joined the night train in the early evening at the railway junction of Hässleholm, about 45 minutes north of the Swedish city of Malmö. The prevailing standard of train travel in Europe is a far cry from the sleek tunnel trains that zip beneath the seabed of the English Channel and can reach speeds of 186 miles per hour. More typical is the boxy Snälltåget. The train's operators boast that it runs on renewable energy, but it also tops out at 124 miles an hour and features a refurbished but still bare-bones cars built in the 1970s. All the seats of the train require reservations. Few remained unoccupied when we boarded. Many passengers had already been on the train for as long as 4 hours after boarding in the Swedish capital or one of the stops in between. Pillows and shoes were strewn about the floor. Some people were already asleep, their heads leaning against seat covers. They read in Swedish, "Say hello to your fellow travelers." When Snalltaget began service from Sweden to Berlin in 2012, it seemed doomed to fail. Budget airlines were expanding their fleets and selling seats on their 1-hour, 40-minute flights from Stockholm to Berlin at dumping prices. Snalltaget struggled to find enough travelers for even two small carriages of its 15-hour, not-much-cheaper trip. But a new era of rail travel began in the summer of 2019 when Thunberg, then 16, helped popularize flagskam, or flight shame. In Sweden that year, train travel increased one-third over the previous summer, while air travel dropped about 4% of the country's major airports. Paul Chiambretto, who has studied the flight shame movement, cautioned that shame has its limits. People who often travel by train are also the ones who often travel by plane, he said, adding that few are ashamed. A common defense, why be ashamed when trains are often more expensive than equivalent flights, when trains sell out far in advance, and when booking can be dizzyingly complicated, especially on cross-border trips involving multiple European rail operators. The number of apps or website tabs you need to have open to even find out how to make some of these trips, said Berlin-based blogger and train enthusiast John Wirth, means it's basically out of reach of anyone who's not uber keen. For many, it comes down to which mode of transportation is less of a hassle. 10 major Swedish airports saw about a quarter fewer travelers this summer than in 2019 before the pandemic. But along with environmental concerns, that drop can be linked to strikes, widespread flight cancellations, and rising ticket prices. Rail passenger numbers, meanwhile, were down 5% in the second quarter of this year, that's 2022, compared with the same period in 2019. Nobody taking the Snalltaget sleeper train cited social pressure as a reason they booked their ticket, though some talked about the environment. Ellen Holtzletzi, 23, said she was studying environmental sciences and has been alarmed by the brutal predictions of scientists she has spoken with. "Every day I'm hearing how bad things are," she said. "Taking the train was a way to express how I can change my lifestyle according to what I believe." In the dining car, where the lights were dimmed for the evening, Thomas Heldblom, 29, said he preferred the train over planes. "It's more comfortable. You can walk around," he said. But when he did get up to walk, his girlfriend, Nina Tekunten, 25, admitted she wouldn't have minded a flight. "The real reason it didn't fly, I think he's a bit of afraid of it," she said, and then laughed. At Malmo Central Station, a night train stopped for a scheduled hour so the dining car could come off and sleeper coaches could be added. Then the train continued on its route, crossing the strait that connects the Baltic and North Seas via the Øresund Bridge, passing the blinking runway lights of Copenhagen Airport a short time later. The conversations on board became quieter. Travelers closed their curtains. Many were asleep by the time they crossed the Danish-German border. The cheapest train tickets just get you a seat. For more money, passengers can reserve a spot in a small cabin with three berths stacked on each side of a narrow aisle. But don't want to be inches away or below strangers? Well, you need them to reserve an entire cabin. The train cars have been retrofitted, but they still have a retro feel. "A brand-new passenger coach is quite expensive for us. That was not an alternative," said Marco Anderson, a senior executive at Snalltaget. With the revival of train travel, European railway companies have completed to secure second-hand coaches. "Compared with other markets, railway passenger coaches have a long lifetime," Anderson said, noting that many of the Snalltaget cars were produced in Germany in the 1970s. The train arrived in Berlin 10 minutes ahead of schedule the next morning, nearly 17 hours after leaving Stockholm. But because of construction, the route terminated at a commuter station. Passengers were left to find their own way to Berlin Central. Berlin to Amsterdam. As travelers streamed onto the platform at Berlin's main station, they were met by environmental activists who encouraged them to say into a camera in German, "Yes, I would welcome an extension of the 9 euro ticket." The German government wants to double train ridership by 2030, and it doesn't think shame or the deterrence of airport chaos will get it there. So this summer, it tried to get people to take a fresh look at public transportation while easing the burden of inflation with the offer of unlimited regional rail and bus service, costing a symbolic 9 euros, about 9 U.S. dollars, per month. At the end of the three-month experiment, German railway companies reported they had sold more than 52 million tickets. The regional trains of DB, the main operator, were 10% busier than before the pandemic. And as many as one in five people who made use of the tickets said they did not previously rely on public transportation. According to a preliminary estimate by a public transportation association, the tickets may have saved 1.8 million tons of carbon dioxide emissions. This month, referring to October 2022, the German government agreed on a successor model, though it expected to cost travelers about $50 a month. Sabine Lorisch, a retiree who rushed to buy a 9 euro ticket when they first became available in May, said she used it for about 30 train trips this summer, discovering places she otherwise wouldn't have explored. When we spoke to her the day before the 9 euro program ended, she was just returning from a nearby spa town. "For years, I traveled excessively by plane," she said. "I'm embarrassed when I think of the carbon footprint." Heidi Rupp, 58, said she saved about $300 by using the tickets this summer. But disappointing service, with widespread reports of overfilled trains, broken air conditioning, and long delays, raised questions for her about how many minds it would change. "You have to change what you offer and not just tweak the prices," she said. "We saw that Rupp and what Rupp, brother, and other critics meant. We wanted to try to get to the Dutch border by mostly traveling on the 9 euro tickets we had just bought. But the tickets weren't valid on the direct trains between Berlin and Amsterdam, so we switched from one regional train to the next." In the German city of Hanover, the train station was so busy that moving along the platform required advanced skills in negotiation and gentle pushing. "It's been like this all summer," travelers and staffers told us. "At times, one had the slight feeling that the system is breaking down a little bit," said Marcel Thues, a senior executive at German railway company Eurobahn. "All three of our German trains were behind schedule, though one made up the time en route. That's in keeping with data showing almost every second German long-distance train was delayed by 6 minutes more through the summer months." Two said he was proud of how his company had managed the busy period, but he blamed strategic political failures for capping railway ambitions. "One should have invested many, many years ago," he said. Germany, a country with a powerful car lobby where people embrace autobahns without speed limits, spent $74 per capita on railways in 2019, compared to about $400 in Switzerland, which leads statistics in train performance. Under Germany's current center-left government, the country may now for the first time spend more money on railways than on road construction and maintenance. The United States spends many times more on roads than on rails. "When our train got to the Dutch border, our trip hit its biggest hitch, a major rail strike in the Netherlands. The conductor urged everyone to get out to avoid getting stuck. People rushed toward the doors, but when we got to the station's parking lot, it was empty. It took another half hour for the first replacement bus to show up. We were lucky among the first to get on. As we slowly made our way to Amsterdam, the grass outside appeared yellow and burned from an extended drought." In an interview, Dutch Environmental Minister Vivian Heinen told us that with climate change, the moist peat common in Northern Europe is shrinking and collapsing, requiring the restructuring of rail beds, increasing maintenance costs, and presenting another challenge to the country's goal of increasing passengers on trains by 30% by 2030. "If it takes too long to travel, or if lines are not reliable, some people will go back into the car or into the plane," Heinen said. "We arrived in Amsterdam about 1 hour late. By then, the schedules of travelers trying to reach the Dutch capital had long been tossed aside. Many were relieved and even a bit surprised that they made it." Amsterdam to Bordeaux, France. The final leg of our trip took us from the Netherlands to France, both countries that have gone beyond shaming and train incentives and begun to limit flights as an option. Amsterdam Schiphol Airport, one of the world's busiest international hubs, in June introduced a cap on the number of passengers who could depart from there. The airport plans to continue caps through the end of March. In the near term, the move is mostly about dealing with post-pandemic staff shortages, which have prompted long lines and flight cancellations. But starting next year, the Dutch government, which owns a majority stake in Schiphol, will cap flights in and out of the airport at 440,000 flights per year. That's down 12% from the 2019 peak. In that decision, the government highlighted the need to address climate change. At the central train station in Amsterdam, as a cold wind blew over the platforms, some travelers said Schiphol doesn't need to work much harder to keep people away. A pair traveling to Paris said in the past they would have taken a plane, but going through security at the airport these days could take longer than the three-hour train ride. The padded red seats on the smooth-running, high-speed Thalys train offered a soothing experience after a day of delays and a strike. It was perhaps too soothing. As we watched sunrise, another passenger discovered their bag had been stolen. It's happening with growing frequency, a train staffer told us. When the train reached Paris, it came to a halt next to a French TGV with a slogan that boasted, "World record in railway speed, 357 miles per hour." France has some flight shaming after the country's top soccer club posted a video of its team traveling to a nearby match by plane and not by train or bus. The transport minister invoked the Latin saying, "To err is human, but to persevere diabolical." France has been train bragging, reflecting the country's pride in its high-speed rail network, which offers some of the fastest connections in the world and is relatively reliable. The state-owned SNCF Railway Company had a record summer, tallying 10% more high-speed train passengers than in 2019. That had a lot to do with the rising gas prices and post-pandemic revenge travel, said Elaine Krukovich, head of the SNCF's high-speed and medium train connections. But other factors may have been at play, too. As part of an effort to reduce carbon emissions by 40% by 2030, compared with 1990 levels, the French government wants to ban short-haul domestic flights. A pending regulation is controversial, and its legality is being reviewed by the European Union. But the government has essentially made it happen anyway by conditioning Air France's pandemic bailout in an agreement that the flag carrier would stop serving routes that can be reached in less than 2.5 hours by train. Krekovich said it's unclear how many travelers have since shifted. Previous estimates suggested that more than 2 million trips could be impacted annually. The link between Paris and the wine capital of Bordeaux is one of the affected routes. In only 2 hours, the train zipped past vineyards, fields, and medieval towers. There's a constant stream of passengers heading to the onboard restaurant, which sells small Bordeaux wine bottles and Croque Monsieur. The espresso comes with a piece of chocolate. The train has a lot of advantages, says Pierre Humic, the mayor of Bordeaux. You can perfectly work on the train, so 2 hours on the train are never lost 2 hours. Bordeaux-based real estate specialist Sebastien Duchamp Chastain, 40, who often travels overseas for work, was less convinced. What was previously a smooth journey with a quick connection at Paris Orly Airport has become longer and more unreliable since his flights were suspended. He said he worries about strikes, breakdowns, and the fact that there aren't enough trains. The absence of planes, he says, also means there is no competition, even when the trains are fully booked. For France's railway company, full trains are good for business. They indirectly help fund the country's costly high-speed network. But some local politicians, including those who share the government's concern over climate change, worry the strategy will backfire. The impact for the area is quite catastrophic, said Marie Recalde, a regional center-left politician in Mérignac, an industry hub and the town where Bordeaux's airport is located. She said the ban has made the area less attractive for companies and has left her scrambling for tickets when she has to travel to Paris. Some businesses have begun shuttling their employees between Paris and Bordeaux on private planes, she said. Well, let's continue our journey now as we stay focused on trains. More specifically, we're going to come back to the U.S. and go to Nevada, where the most authentic railway site has steam, smoke, and a cat. Justin Franz wrote this article in a special to the Washington Post, and it was later published in the April 15, 2022 edition of the News and Observer. No, excuse me, that's Erie. It was in the Post originally on that date. I had the wrong line there. So it was April 15, 2022 in the Washington Post. So let's find out what's happening with Mr. Franz and his trip to Nevada. One of the things Mark Bassett noticed on his first visit to the Nevada Northern Railway Museum some 25 years ago was the lack of warning signs, glass cases, and velvet ropes protecting the artifacts. There were no signs saying, "Don't go there," "Don't touch that," said Bassett, then just a visitor, but now president and executive director of the railroad. It's very unusual for a museum. That's because the Nevada Northern Railway Museum is not your typical museum. William Wilhon, the Smithsonian's late transportation curator, called the museum complex one of the most complete, most authentic, and best cared for historic railroad sites in North America. Spread out over 56 acres on the edge of Ely, Nevada, are more than 100 historic rail cars, 58 buildings and structures, 3 restored steam locomotives, 1 internet-famous cat, and countless artifacts that contribute to the site's designation as a National Historic Landmark. It's one of the few historic railroads in the country to achieve such distinguished status. Railroad tracks were first put down in this remote stretch of Nevada desert, located about 4 hours north of Las Vegas and about 3.5 hours southwest of Salt Lake City, about 116 years ago, shortly after copper was discovered in the mountains that surround Ely. At the time, the nation's need for copper was booming as electricity and telephone lines spread across the country. Ely's economy boomed, too, and a railroad was built from the mines just south of there, north to McGill, where raw copper ore was processed, then on to Cobre and Shafter, where the finished product was handed off to massive transcontinental railroads for shipment to market. In the 1910s and 1920s, dozens of trains would chug through Ely around the clock, taking raw ore to the smelter at McGill. The railroad also operated passenger trains to take miners to work and children to school. One train, the Steptoe Valley Flyer, ran all the way to Cobre, where passengers would transfer to a mainline train bound for the big cities to the east and west. Passenger trains stopped running in 1941 after better roads opened up in the area. But the government regulator that oversaw the railroad required it to keep one passenger train, steam locomotive and all, just in case those newfangled automobiles didn't pan out. That decision would have a big effect on the community a few decades later. Moving copper kept the railroad busy until around the 1980s, when demand waned and the mines closed. Almost overnight, the railroad had nothing to haul, so its owner, the Kennecott Copper Corporation, shut it down in June 1983. The busy little rail yard in Ely, which had hummed with the sounds of trains coming and going day and night for about 77 years, fell silent. The closure of both the mine and the railroad spelled trouble for the town. The plug had been pulled on the town, and they were scared, because if you look at the history of Nevada, you'll see a lot of towns that died when the mine closed, Bassett said. The people of Ely knew that if they didn't do something, the town might just dry up and blow away into the desert. Although there was no way for the town to reopen the mine, some community members thought reopening the railroad and running excursion trains could help attract tourists. They approached Kennecott about donating some track, locomotives, and cars. Instead, the company gave the town almost everything, including the old. Passenger train that had been stored back in 1941. In May 1987, the Nevada Northern Railway Museum opened for business, with locomotive number 40, a 460 steam locomotive built in 1910 for passenger trains, leading the way. Initially, the museum's volunteers were primarily interested in running train excursions for locals and tourists. But as the years went on, they realized that Kennecott had given them something very special. Due in part to the area's remoteness, much of the railroad and its facilities were never upgraded. When updates did come along, as when modern diesel locomotives arrived in the 1950s, the old equipment was just pushed out of the way instead of being scrapped. The Nevada Northern employees were also pack rats. Along with railroad equipment, the Nevada Northern has what it believes to be one of the largest and most intact collections of corporate paperwork anywhere in the country, with documents dating back to the construction in 1905 and 1906. They didn't throw away anything, said archivist and trainmaster Con Trumbull, the man tasked with sorting through the museum's artifacts. When you're here, you're really stepping into a time warp, and you're able to see what a railroad looked like and felt like in the 1920s and 1930s, he said. To maintain that time warp quality, the organization doesn't rope off exhibits or put up keep-out signs. Visitors can wander the grounds as they please and watch up close as workers maintain the vintage steam locomotives. That unusual access is what Bassett loved about the place when he first visited in the late 1990s and why he quickly came back as a volunteer. In 2002, he became executive director and president of the railroad. Bassett said maintaining that type of unfettered access is challenging at times, but it's something he believes is important. Once visitors arrive at the museum, after buying a ticket at the depot, they receive constant safety reminders to stand back at least 6 feet from moving equipment, to not climb onto anything, and to be aware of their surroundings. The message is even incorporated into the railroad's logo. One of the highlights of any visit to the Nevada Northern, though, is the train ride. On most weekends from March until December, and daily from spring until fall, visitors can take a ride through Robinson Canyon along the same route that copper ore traveled a century or so ago. Vintage steam locomotives power the train, giving visitors a smoky but unforgettable experience. On select Friday nights from May until September, the railroad runs a train out into the desert where it's met by a park ranger with telescopes from nearby Great Basin National Park, known for having some of the darkest skies in the lower 48. The excursions regularly sell out a year in advance. The railroad employs about 20 people and many volunteers who run and maintain trains, write grants, archive, and more. However, the most famous on-site personality is a cat named Dirt. Born inside the locomotive shop in 2008, the orange and white cat was adopted by the workers and spends his days exploring the complex and welcoming visitors. He's also built up a considerable following on social media. One look at Dirt and the reason for his name quickly becomes clear. Living inside an active railroad shop is a dirty affair, but there's no doubt the cat is well cared for, as exemplified by the bags of treats everywhere and the affection he gets from workers. Although the museum offers guided tours and interpretive signage, Trumbull says it's important to remember that a visit to the Nevada Northern isn't your typical museum experience. The reason to visit is to immerse oneself in a place as it existed a century ago, warts and all. Wow. And again, the Nevada Northern Railway Museum is quite a place in Ely. At 1100 Avenue, Ely, Nevada. And that, my friend, brings us to the end of today's journey. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us again next time. And we'll remind you that the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you that Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That website again, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.